Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. For the next hour, 2 hours, excuse me, we'll be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And of course, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, that number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/pgann. That's blogtalkradio.com/pgann. You can send an email message to the show at goforth.gann@gmail.com. That's goforth.gann@gmail.com. Expected to be joined by Bears tight end Desmond Clark. We're going to talk about the Bears season and what's up next for him as he is a free agent. And also, we're expected to be joined by Kurt Healing from ProBasketballTalk.com. We're going to discuss the Carmelo Anthony trade and that whole saga situation, the melodrama, if you will. That is the whole Carmelo Anthony thing. And as of right now, it's still a lot of melodrama with this whole situation. Jeremy, how are you today?
What's going on, Paul? I mean, you know, windy day. It's bringing in, I guess, a lot of change.
Change, one thing that's constant in life is change.
Figured I'd start it off with an easy softball to you. It looks like Carmelo Anthony better get used to these winds of change because it looks like something will be happening soon. He's either going to be playing, I guess, in Brooklyn or at MSG.
And you're right. I mean, there are reports at this time that the New Jersey Nets, or the Brooklyn Nets, they'll be called in a couple of years, and the New York Knicks are involved with trade talks for Carmelo Anthony. As of right now, nothing has been done. But again, this is all contingent upon Carmelo Anthony signing the 3-year, $65 million extension, which he will sign, but I don't think he says he will sign it I think he's going to sign it with the Knicks. To be honest with you, I mean, I think this, I know the Nets have sweetened their offer, but now the Knicks are going to have to step their game up in terms of finding the necessary pieces to intrigue Denver and make Denver want to pull the trigger. And as of right now, there have been reports they've added Danilo Gallinari, Raymond Felton, Wilson Chandler, in the expiring contract of Eddie Curry. And so right now, and according to reports, a draft pick. So as of right now, that's the Knicks' offer. And in terms of the New Jersey Nets, their offer is Derek Favors, Devin Harris, Troy Murphy, his expiring contract, Ben Uzal, and 4 first-round draft picks for Carmelo Anthony. So Carmelo Anthony, Chauncey Billups, and a few other guys. So the Nuggets prefer the Nets offer, but the Knicks have sweetened their deal. And the reality of it is, I don't think Carmelo will sign an extension with the Nets. I think Carmelo is going to sign an extension with the New York Knicks. I don't think he wants to be a Net. I really don't. I just think he wants to be at MSG, Madison Square Garden, playing for the New York Knicks. I just don't see the possibilities of him playing with the New Jersey Nets. It's going to be the Knicks in my mind.
Well, I guess if you look at what Stephen A. said a couple weeks ago on the show, and certainly if you look at this critically, if you're looking to win and you're looking to win now, and certainly if you're trying to compete, especially in the East, and Carmelo said that right now, you know, the Knicks certainly are appealing. Because of Amari and the fact that they already have some pieces in place, you wonder kind of if you're Carmelo, other than going home to Brooklyn, which isn't too far from Madison Square Garden, what's the real upside of a long-term deal, you know, with the Nets? Other than, I mean, he has this in he's the man in Denver. I mean, he has that now. Why go all the way across, you know, the country to have the same thing? Why not just sign the extension in Denver?
Well, I think the reality of it is Carmelo obviously wants to come east. He was born in Brooklyn, grew up in Baltimore. So the reality of it is he wants to be east coast, and whether that's with the Knicks or with the Nets. To me, it's obviously going to be with the Knicks, I believe. I mean, the Nuggets prefer the Nets offer, but the Nets aren't pulling the trigger unless Carmelo signs the extension at $65 million. And also, there's some talks that with Carmelo Anthony, one of the reasons he wants to make sure he signs that extension is because of the amount of money he's going to make, and that's $65 million. And his concern is with the new collective bargaining agreement coming up, that he may not make the same type of money that he has an opportunity to make now. But I heard Kenny Smith say this, and I agree with it. Superstars, no matter what system, are going to get paid. So, I mean, I think Carmelo will get paid whether it's under this collective bargaining agreement or another collective bargaining agreement. No matter what a collective bargaining agreement you agree to, the reality of it is that superstars will get paid. They get paid. So he's going to get his money regardless, but that is his concern. He wants that $65 million. He wants it now. And he wants, so he's willing to sign that. He's going to sign a 3-year extension. It's just a matter of will it be with the Knicks or will it be with the Nets. But if I'm a betting man, and I'm not, but if I'm going to bet, I'm going to put my money on Manhattan and Madison Square Garden and the New York Knicks. And Brooklyn is just going to have to take a loss this time. But I said this before.
But you're right, Paul. But I'm cutting in. I mean, you don't really. To me, I'm going back to the numbers here, and that's why I say if I'm Carmelo, I think the lesson you learn in this is that you can't do it alone. He had a great teammate in Chauncey Billups, certainly you know out west, but it's going to be tough with the Nets. New York is some nice pieces, and especially in the short term. I mean, if you had Carmelo Anthony, Chauncey Billups, Amon'ra Stoudemire, I mean, they're next year one or two pieces away from, again, having a very competitive Eastern Division.
Well, and also, I agree with that. I mean, in terms of if you're Carmelo Anthony, I think the best landing spot for you would be the Knicks. But, and I also heard Kenny Smith say this as well, it would make sense to me that maybe you just wait to the end of the season, let this play out through the season, and just sign with the Knicks in the offseason. And by signing with the Knicks, you're still keeping the pieces of Gallinari, of Wilson Chandler, of Raymond Felton. You're still keeping those pieces in New York. So why go to the Knicks after they gutted a portion of their team now when you can go to the Knicks at the end of the year? And that goes back to what Kenny Smith's point was, and I brought up earlier, superstars will get paid no matter the situation, no matter the collective bargaining agreement. Superstars will get paid. So that would be my thinking if I'm Carmelo Anthony. I would wait to the offseason, sign with the Knicks, and keep those pieces there. That's what I would. More sense than doing it now.
But Paul, you understand, I mean, I'm sure you understand, this is not about Carmelo anymore. I mean, I think credit, and I mean this, credit, I think, a Denver Nuggets organization that certainly realizes that this is the end of their tenure with Carmelo Anthony. And to walk away from this with nothing in hand is a huge loss for them. It's not like, we let one slip away. That's a huge loss. So credit this organization for essentially strong-arming the player to say, listen, if you don't get something out of this trade, I think that benefits you, then too bad, because you will. And then he said earlier this week, you know, he doesn't want to be rented for one season because he thinks at this
right.
point in his career he's above that. But, I mean, I'll credit this organization for saying, you know what, business first, long-term aspects for our organization first. We have to get something out of this, too.
And they do, rightfully so. They do. I just feel like, you know, if you're Carmelo Anthony, I mean, you're in a position now where even, let's just say he is traded to a rental situation. I mean, he could try to block it or on some level, you know, he could make it difficult for that rent a team, that team that wants to rent him. He could make it difficult, but at the end of the day, if he's traded, he has to go, if he wants to continue to get paid and so on and so forth. But the reality of it is, yes, Denver has to do what they have to do, and ultimately Carmelo has to do what he has to do, and Denver is going to find a way to move him. They want pieces for this guy, like you said, and kudos to the Nuggets in that respect. I mean, you know, you have to take care of the long-term viability of your franchise. So that's very important as well to the Denver Nuggets. So, and when it comes down to that, it should be interesting how this thing plays out, whether it's New York or New Jersey. But the reality of it is we all know Carmelo wants to play in New York with the New York Knicks. And so I just think it's a matter. I think Carmelo, in a lot of ways, if he wants to sign the extension with the Nets, the deal would have already been done. The deal would have been done a long time ago. So it's obvious he really does not want to sign that extension with the Nets. It's obvious that he wants to sign an extension with the New York Knicks, and he wants to be a New York Knicks very bad. And,
right,
if you add Carmelo to the New York Knicks, and I understand the Knicks were balking at adding certain pieces to this deal, but at the end of the day, Danilo Gallinari, Wilson Chandler, will not be as good as Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo Anthony is a legitimate superstar. None of those guys will be superstars in this league. And Raymond Felton's a good point guard, but you are adding Chauncey Billups to the mix. And also, if he would go to the New Jersey Nets, saying Carmelo Anthony, I mean, you're really stripped down if you're the New Jersey Nets, and there's really not a pop there. You're out of playoffs at this point. So as of right now, you're out of the playoffs, and there's a good chance that you may not make it into the playoffs. So if you're Carmelo Anthony and you go with the New Jersey Nets, there's a possibility you won't make the playoffs this year. So you're going to be on the outside looking in terms of the playoffs this year. So that just leads me to believe. I mean, the Nets currently are 8.5 games out of the final playoff spot, the 8th and final playoff spot. So the reality of it is, if you sign with the New Jersey Nets and you okay the deal to the New Jersey Nets, you will not be making the playoffs this year. So you will be on the outside looking in. Next year you'll have a lot of cap room and so on and so forth, but you will be out of the playoffs this year. And there's no guarantee that you'll be able to add pieces in New Jersey or Brooklyn, however you want to call them, the following year in order to make your team better. So in my mind, that also leads me to believe that Carmelo Anthony, ultimately, the deal will be between the Nuggets and the Knicks, and Carmelo Anthony will be a Knick by the time this whole thing is said and done. And whether it be this weekend or by the trade deadline, which is Thursday, but it will be done. And it's just a matter of time of when. Obviously, when will be have to be before Thursday. So it's just a matter of time of when. And I just think it's a better situation for Carmelo Anthony. It's good for the league as well to have two legitimate superstars in New York City. I mean, that's always a good thing. The media capital of the world, I mean, that's a good thing.
I mean, and yeah, and I also, to a certain degree, I think, you know, I think if you're either play, you know, I don't want to say either player, Amari, as if the trade is already a done deal, but I think they look at this, again, they have a young Raymond Felton. You bring in a guy, a Chauncey Billups, who certainly there can, I think, really impact the long-term, the short-term, if you will, long-term success of a Raymond Felton. They have some pieces of a pie that puts them, you know, in that Chicago tier, if you will, going into next season. Certainly not that deep if you look at rosters, but the talent level, you know, can certainly lend them the fact, I mean, Chauncey is a natural point, but he'll probably slide over to the shooting guard. And certainly they have four very strong players.
Well, I mean, if obviously Felton may go to Denver in any deal here. So it's going to be Chauncey Billups. It's going to be Chauncey Billups as the point guard, no Raymond Felton in that particular situation. But, I mean, the Knicks are a team that, I mean, I don't think they need to make noise this year, but anytime you have two superstars in Amari and Melo, you have opportunities. But I don't think it'll happen this year for them, but they are slowly but surely building this thing up to where possibly, I mean, there was talk at Melo's wedding this summer about Chris Paul, and Amari, Todd Amari, and Carmelo Anthony teaming up with the New York Knicks in New York. So,
the problem there, though, is, and I still go back to saying this, and I look at that, and I go right back, and I would say, ultimately, of the three of those players, now you look at arguably Chris Paul is there, Chris Bosh in Miami, and meaning he's going to be the one to take the least amount of money, but does that lend them two caps in to add the pieces? You know, when you look at what Boston has done successfully is, they've done this they had a guy in Paul Pierce who was their young, not so young anymore, but at that time younger superstar. They add the more veteran pieces at less money. I mean, Shaq takes the veteran minimum and has certainly, you know, this year come out and demonstrated that in a role that people were wondering if he could or couldn't do, he's excelled in. I mean, KG is the heart and soul of that team. It just looks like, you know, they are poised because they have more veteran players. You look at who you're going to be able to add with the least amount of cap space, it doesn't – with Miami next year, that's going to be their big question is, are they going to be able to add the necessary pieces?
Well, and we shall see, but they do lose Eddie Curry's expiring contract, but – again, will they be able to add the pieces is key to improve their roster and improve the overall situation.
Because I think in the new NBA, in the superstar, like in this team of superstardom, I think that's ultimately the question. Will they be able to, can they exist in that environment?
Well, I mean, you're right. I mean, we are seeing a trend now with the Miami Heat of teams of people and players trying to come together and to have almost super teams in a lot of ways. And if you add a Chris Paul and you add a Carmelo Anthony to an already Amari Stoudemire team, you right now are putting yourself in a position to compete with the superstars in Miami, with the situation in Chicago, and also with Boston. So you are putting yourself in position if all those things can happen, and if all those things do happen. But again, it all starts with Carmelo Anthony and whether or not the Knicks can get that done and bring him into the fold and add him with Amari Stoudemire at this point, and then as we go down the line, we'll see whether or not they can add other pieces to their roster. Let's take a caller now. Hello, you're on Go For It. Hello?
Hello.
Yes.
Hello?
Yes.
There you go. I wanted to call and get your opinion on something and see what you thought about Melo. If it was a better fit for him to go to a team like Los Angeles or a team like New York with what's going on in Miami and their inconsistency without the lack of that real dominant big man in the paint that I believe Chris Bosh just isn't.
Well, I think with Carmelo Anthony, if he's really truly about winning championship, he would try to make that Denver situation work because I think the Western Conference is set up where you have an agent, Tim Duncan, Dirk Nowitzki is getting older, and Kobe's getting a little older as well. I think you have an opportunity there in that Western Conference. But in terms of Melo, I mean, it's very obvious at this point he wants to go east, and whether that's with the Knicks or with the Nets. But to me, it's obvious he wants to be with the New York Knicks. And I just think, in terms of him going to the New York Knicks and that whole situation, with what they're building in Miami and what you have in Orlando and just the whole situation in the Eastern Conference, in my mind, I don't think that's a good place to go if you were talking about winning championships and you really want to win championships. Because it may come a point in this league with Bosh, Wade, and LeBron all together where it'll be like a Michael Jordan situation where Patrick, you have past guys like Patrick Ewing, Reggie Miller, who keep running into that whole situation, who kept running into Michael Jordan. We may see that with LeBron, Bosh, and Wade. So,
let me ask you this: Does it matter if you see them in the semifinals or in the finals or in the championship? I mean, you have to, in order to be the best, you have to beat the best. Am I not correct in saying that?
True. But I mean, if there's always an opportunity to you want to get to the finals first, and get to the finals, your opportunity and your chances in the Western Conference could be a lot easier than comparison to having to go through the Eastern Conference. I just think in my mind, your best opportunity is to stay out west and try to get to the finals that way, instead of having to go through LeBron, Bosh, and Wade, and also see those guys multiple times during the regular season.
True. I see. Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, you know, one of the things, though, Paul, I will say, in regards to the comment of if he's serious about winning the championship, he stays out west. I think when you look at, though, again, this new mindset in the NBA of these super teams, it's very attractive for some of these players because they're starting to think to themselves, you know, Carmelo Anthony, Amari Stoudemire, I mean, they're now trying to compete for supremacy against, you know, Dwayne, LeBron, and Chris Bosh. Who is he going to get out west because of a guy like Amari who's already signed long-term? So, in a way, I can't say I disagree with you, but I think when you look at him, it's a unique situation because he's certainly, I think, trying to propel himself into almost like last year's free agent class.
Well, I mean, in a lot of ways, it's very similar in some respect in terms of him kind of holding, in some respect, all the cards in a lot of ways. I mean, all these deals are contingent upon him signing, meaning Melo, signing the extension. Those deals are contingent upon that. Now, it's up to him whether or not he's going to do it. So these deals don't get done unless he signs the dotted line. And so he holds all the cards here. But I just think, all in all, if you're about winning championships, you will stay out west. But second to that, if you want to go to New York, if you want to go to the East Coast, and you want to choose between the Knicks or the Nets, looking at the Nets deal and looking at the Knicks deal, I think your best opportunity is to go with the New York Knicks. And also, I mean, granted, I mean, the Nets, they are in New Jersey, but they're coming to Brooklyn. But there's nothing like Madison Square Garden. Their tradition, I mean, it's the Mecca. It's the Mecca of basketball, Madison Square Garden. So there's nothing like playing at Madison Square Garden 41 times a year when your New York Knicks are playing some great basketball. So that's, I mean, every player's dream in a lot of ways. Well, not everybody's player's dream, but a lot of players want to play on that big stage in New York City. And a lot of players enjoy coming to the Garden, like a Kobe, like a LeBron James. Those guys should have their best games at Madison Square Garden. It's the big stage. They love it. It's Broadway. They love it. So, I mean, and with that being said, Carmelo Anthony loves it too, just like any other player, and he wants to be a New York Knicks, and I think it'll happen by Thursday. Hopefully it'll happen by the weekend so we won't hear about it anymore. I mean, this has been going on for a very long time, and then you had the situation with the Nets where they said, their owner came out and said, you know what, we're out of these sweepstakes, we're done with this whole situation. a situation, which I call it. When he said that, you knew it was a smokescreen. I mean, come on. You have an opportunity to acquire Carmelo Anthony, and also you're moving into a new building. You're moving to Brooklyn. So you want to have a superstar in place when you go to Brooklyn. Who better than Carmelo Anthony? So, I mean, when Prokhorov said that, at that point I knew, you know what, I didn't believe him at that time. I remember we had Stephen A. Smith on the show when he talked about it as well. I didn't believe it. I mean, I just didn't believe that the Nets were out of the running for Carmelo Anthony. I just didn't believe it. I think it was just a smokescreen, and I don't know who bought it, but it was just that. It was just trying to tell the world that, hey, we're out of these sweepstakes, but in reality, you still were talking to the Nuggets because you still want Carmelo Anthony to be on your roster.
No, I completely agree. I think that's ultimately, too, you know, I think if there's a dark horse in any of this, you know, one of them is the fact that I think the Nets in all of this are trying, they're a little bit too desperate, almost, they're trying too hard. I think when you look at the Knicks are, you know, and I think the Knicks have more to offer other than, you know, money and a move. So maybe that, realistically, I think the Knicks are, obviously, they're the front runner. But I also think they're not, the Nets are doing themselves no favor because with all this talk and all this hype, the lack of results here, again, to me, it doesn't bode well for another offseason.
You're talking in terms of having to go after Carmelo Anthony?
Well, I mean, they go after LeBron, and they have hardly go after LeBron. No, they're not getting him. But now it seems like they said they're going after Carmelo. Then the guy, then he says he doesn't want him. And I remember when we did have Stephen A. on, you asked him directly, you know, what was his thoughts on that. And Stephen laughed and pretty much said, you know, that nothing is done until certainly, you know, he signs the extension. And certainly that was pretty much right on the point. But to do all of this, to me, if you're a Nets organization and land nothing, I just kind of wonder, or it makes me wonder, I think the motive there. What are they looking to do? What are they looking to accomplish?
Well, I mean, I think what they're trying to accomplish is pretty much this. 2012, you moved to Brooklyn. You want a buzz in that arena. I mean, it's going to be hard to have a buzz when you have Devin Harris, Brooke Lopez, and Derek Favors. And granted, Derek Favors could be something by then. And, you know, Brooke Lopez is an improving big man and has a lot of ability. But again, when you open a new arena and you go to Brooklyn, you want to go to Brooklyn with a superstar with you. You want to go in Brooklyn with a superstar in tow. So, I mean, it just looks better for you to, if you want to have a buzz with your team and you want to have people buzzing over your team, in my mind, Carmelo Anthony would do that. And so, to me, I think you have to make this push for Carmelo Anthony. I think you have to make these – you made the push for LeBron last year. You have to make these pushes and do these things because, again, you want a buzz for your team. You want that buzz. You want that buzz. And one of the ways to get a buzz for your team is – to get a superstar. And as of right now,
Paul,
I look at that roster.
But that's the problem. That's my question, Paul. Is all of this what they're doing? I mean, they're going after these superstars. And again, I'm not saying they have to go after these players. What they're doing is, in my opinion, in regards, is the right thing to do. They have to make an attempt at, you know, to land these players. But all of this hoopla, to get nothing out of it, to me, I kind of question the goal. Like, what's your goal there? Was that your goal?
Well, obviously your goal was to try to land Carmelo Anthony. But
and
the reality of it is, I mean, you have to take a shot. You have to take a shot. You take a shot, you lose. I mean, Carmelo makes your team better. It makes it more attractive to other free agents that may be out there in the upcoming years to come. So you want that situation to be attractive. And one of the ways to make that situation attractive is to get Carmelo Anthony. I mean, it's like an ugly person getting a different hairstyle. What do you have to lose? Yeah, you're already ugly. So if you get a different hairstyle, maybe you won't be ugly. What do you have to lose? There's nothing to lose here. Your franchise is 8.5 games behind, in terms of getting into the playoffs behind the 8th seed, which is the Indiana Pacers. So they're 8 games behind them. So what do you have to lose here? What do you have to lose here? I mean, if you strike out, you strike out your same spot and you continue to try to build with what you have. But if you acquire Carmelo Anthony, that changes things. So I just think, I mean, to me, why not try? Why not continue to try? It's not like you have a good team to begin with. It's not like your team is a playoff team.
But they're looking, to me, Paul, again, I'm going to tell you, they look a little, it just looks a little sad when this is how you're working. And to a certain regards, you know, you're coming up with nothing.
Well, yes. I mean, obviously, if you're striking out, you're striking out. But, I mean, you got to try. You know, you got to try. I mean, you can't say, you know, you can't, okay, we have this team, but we're not trying to make it better. We're not doing the things that we have to do to try to make it better. So you have to try. Now, again, if you don't get better, you don't get better. If you don't land the big fish, you don't land the big fish. But you try. You put the bait out there, and you try to reel something in. But you can't catch any fish if you're not going to put it out there to the ocean, if you're not going to put it out there to the water. You're not going to be able to catch the fish. So you have to try. What happens is what happens. If you don't get the fish, you don't get the fish. But you try. So you have to try to make your situation better. You have to try to make the situation better. So, and I think the Nets are trying to make their situation better. Whether they get the guy that they want is a whole other story. But, hey, they're trying. So you can't knock JT, Mikhail Prokhorov, and the New Jersey Nets for going out here and trying to land the big fish, if you will, in Carmelo Anthony. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, see how those things transpires. But, I mean, I believe my money is on the New York Knicks. And I'm assuming you would agree with that. Your money is also on the New York Knicks acquiring Carmelo Anthony.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm not going to say zero chance, but as close to zero as there is, if not, I mean, for the first time ever, I would almost say there is zero chance that this is a done deal. There's no chance that none at all. It's a shame that the Nets come out. And I think one of the biggest reasons I say it is, again, because I think when you look at it critically, there's no one wants to be on that franchise, period.
Well, I mean, I just think also you're competing against the New York Knicks in this situation. So, and like I said, the Knicks are an institution in New York City. And Madison Square Garden is a big, beautiful building and the mecca of basketball. So everybody wants to play in the mecca of basketball. And Carmelo has options here. He has options. So the way I see it, he's going to choose New York Knicks. And personally, I think that is his best option. If he wants to try to win now, his best option is in New York with the New York Knickerbockers. But again, we'll see how things transpire this weekend. It is All-Star Weekend in the NBA. Everybody has converged on Los Angeles, California at the Staples Center. As it is All-Star Weekend, and that we're at the unofficial midpoint of the NBA season. And if we look at the NBA at this point, and we can start in the Eastern Conference. Now, if we look at the Eastern Conference, I mean, you have Boston and Miami, who who are essentially tied for the top spot. And then you have the Chicago Bulls there who are two games back and who are playing some great basketball right now. And you have the Orlando Magic there at the fourth spot. So the Eastern Conference right now is going to come down, in my mind, as we project through the rest of the season and into the playoffs, it's going to come down to Boston, to Miami, to Chicago, and to the Orlando Magic. I mean, all those teams right there, I believe, can beat each other. But right now, I mean, I guess you could say the class of the Eastern Conference at this point is probably the Boston Celtics. And this is a Boston Celtics team that are missing a lot of key guys, missing Delonte West, missing a Jermaine O'Neal. So this team are on top of the Eastern Conference, even after missing a lot of key guys, a lot of guys that they expected to contribute this particular season. And right now they're on top. And one thing we have to point to in looking at this Eastern Conference is how these teams fare against above 500 ball clubs. And you look at it, that's a weakness for the Miami Heat. They're 12-13 against above 500 teams. The Boston Celtics are 19-8. The Orlando Magic have also struggled against above 500 teams at 10-17. And your Chicago Bulls are 14-10. So they fare pretty decently against teams above 500. But right now, so if you look at it, I mean, I just think Orlando's going to be there, Chicago's going to be there, Miami will be there, and Boston will be there. But as of right now, if you put a gun to my head, I have to say the team with the best opportunity would be the Boston Celtics, but I also said look out for those Orlando Magic. And don't sleep on the Chicago Bulls, and of course the Miami Heat will be there with their big three. Your thoughts on the Eastern Conference?
Well, I think the only thing, I agree, I think Chicago, you may see them stumble a little bit down the stretch, only because I don't think they're not going to be used to being this competitive throughout the whole season. I think Boston, you can expect the veterans there to carry the load no matter what. I think Orlando, they're trained, they have gone, you know, to the wire, they know what it's going to take. I think Miami, all the players there, enough said. So I think if there's an odd man out, it's Chicago, strictly because this, I think, is the first year for them where they have to look at this and say, you know, they're not used to this. They're not used to having to play wire to wire and be this competitive for the whole season. Does it mean that they can't? That's not what I'm saying. I think, again, I do agree with you. They are very – they're a stronger team, I think, than Orlando is right now. I think they have because I think they have more – ultimately, they have more talent, maybe not more depth, but position by position, I think Chicago is more – slightly more talented than Orlando. So I think, you know, I see them almost as no lower than a 3-seed talent-wise. Player-wise, we don't know. I mean, that's why I say that I couldn't say one way or the other. I look at this season in terms of how it's going to shake out in the Eastern Conference, and I think you're going to learn a lot about the next couple of years of Eastern Conference NBA basketball.
And like I said, the Eastern Conference is going to be exciting because I think, you know, it's wide open. It's wide open. Miami has a legitimate shot. Chicago, I think, will have a legitimate shot, and Orlando has a legitimate shot. If you add Carmelo to the New York Knicks, I mean, you have to give them a shot as well.
Absolutely.
But if you look out West, I think out West comes down to three teams, San Antonio, Dallas, and the Lakers. No particular order there. Oklahoma City, also a team that to watch out for, but I don't think at this point they're ready to take that lead. But I like the Mavericks. I like the Lakers, and I also like the Spurs, and the Spurs are right now on top of the Western Conference, 46-10, and playing some very good basketball right now. Dallas is a team that struggled when they lost Nowitzki for an extended period of time, and also when they lost Caron Butler. Possibility Caron Butler could be back for the Dallas Mavericks, and that helps their situation greatly. He's a guy that they have missed. So he helps that situation greatly. And, of course, you have the Los Angeles Lakers, a team that they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers the other day. So, I mean, a team that hasn't been playing great basketball, but, again, with Kobe, with Odom, with Gasol, they have the ability to turn it on. But I think it comes down to those three teams, San Antonio, Dallas, and the Los Angeles Lakers. And, again, if I was picking, I wouldn't bet against the champion, and that's the Los Angeles Lakers. So I think the Los Angeles Lakers is the team that will come out of the West. I know in terms of the East, I did say the Celtics, but also like the Magic there. I think the Magic will turn some things around. But again, if you're looking at it today, I think you have to say the Boston Celtics out East. But in the West, I think you have to say the Los Angeles Lakers. And because of Gasol, Kobe, and Odom, I think the Los Angeles Lakers will be the team in the Western Conference. Your thoughts on the Western Conference?
Well, I think, you know, the Spurs certainly have that experience, but to me, long-term, and I think the Lakers, there is really no team out West that's ultimately historically equipped to handle them. The West hasn't changed in so many years. It's almost a formality to recognize that if it were going to be any one team, to me, maybe the Spurs, but they don't excite me. They're the same old team. I guess maybe you might think if there was an injury on the Lakers, then what? Because that hasn't happened to them yet, Paul. I mean, if we look at the Lakers historically, they have not had to go it without a Derek Fisher, a Gasol, or a Kobe like the Celtics have had to do for an extended period of time with all of their big players. But that being said, I don't see anybody, quote unquote, that side of Mississippi in a 7-game series in for the NBA. To get into the finals, beating Phil Jackson and Kobe Bryant with those rosters, which they've already tried and they've all failed.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you at this point. Now, again, San Antonio is an improved team, but I think the team to watch out for is Dallas, especially if they can get Caron Butler back, because before those injuries, Dallas played some very good basketball. So I think Dallas is a team to watch out for, but I think the Lakers, when it's all said and done, will get it done and will ultimately get back to the NBA Finals. And again, out East, I think out East is more of a crapshoot than it is in the Western Conference. I know Boston has dominated Miami throughout the regular season, but with LeBron James, with Dwayne Wade, and with Chris Bosh on the court at any given time, you have an opportunity. And so I just think, you know, don't sleep on Miami and their whole situation. Don't sleep there, because I think a lot of people are sleeping a little bit on Miami. But don't sleep, because Miami, when it's all said and done, I think they will be there contending with the Boston Celtics. And I know Boston has dominated them in the regular season. But again, with LeBron James, with Wade, and with Bosh, there is an opportunity. Sorry to interrupt you, but let's bring in Kurt Healy from ProBasketballTalk.com. Kurt, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Paul?
Doing well. Kurt, let's start with Carmelo Anthony and that whole situation. At this point, the Nets have an offer in place for Carmelo that includes Derek Favors, Devin Harris, and 4 first-round draft picks. And at this point now, the Knicks have apparently sweetened their offer and added Gallinari, Wilson Chandler, Raymond Felton, Eddie Curry, and a draft pick as well. When it's all said and done, where does Carmelo Anthony land?
You know, if we knew that, this would have been a whole lot faster. You know, it's really, the thing is, it's down to him, and ultimately that's kind of been the stalling point for so long, because he's been playing the whole I think he's liked being wooed. I think he's kind of liked the attention, and he's done the, you know, I love New York. Oh, I would have loved to have met with Prokhorov. Oh, of course the Nuggets are still on the, you know, I'd still sign the extension, even though he hasn't signed the extension, and if he really wanted to, he already would have. He kind of kept playing all these sides. It's now at the point where it's in his lap. You know, he's going to meet with Prokhorov some point today, somewhere in, you know, some hidden spot in L.A. They're going to talk, and it's going to come down to him. If he signs the Nets extension, that's what the Nuggets would prefer. That's more picks, and Derek Favors has, you know, tremendous upside. They really want him more than anyone. If not, they'll push and pull with the Nets, with the Knicks a little more and try to get another pick out of him. But ultimately, the Nuggets don't really have a choice. They've got to deal him or lose him for nothing, so they'll kind of take what they can get. And that's it. I mean, it's down to Melo. It's down to whatever he decides to do. And my guess is he'll go Knicks, but he's unpredictable at this point.
And you talked about the Nuggets preferring the Nets deal over the Knicks deal, but in looking at what the Knicks are offering now and sweetening their offer, it's not that bad either.
No. It was never a terrible offer, and I think it's funny. I think a lot of Knicks fans kind of took it like they don't like our guys. I'm like, well, it's not that they don't like your guys. It's that Favors is one of those guys who has a lot of potential. It's raw and untapped, and you don't know what he could be. But it's also the picks. You know, you get four picks as opposed to one, maybe two at best out of the Knicks. And going into the new cap, whatever that's going to be, I think they just kind of preferred they've always kind of preferred the Nets, offer. The Knicks one's okay. I mean, at the end of the day, it's a lot better than what Cleveland and Toronto got, and that's the situation the Nuggets ultimately have to avoid.
Right.
So, Kurt, Paul and I were saying earlier in the show, though, in terms of the real offers between the Nets and the Knicks, if you're Carmelo Anthony, though, I mean, does it make sense for you to want to go to the Nets and have to start over from scratch when when you're doing that now in Denver?
Yeah. I think the Knicks are more attractive as a team because of Amari Stoudemire. The flip side of that, though, is and you really have to think about this, not only if you're Carmelo, but if you're a Knicks fan. You're now going to have your two max guys. You're going to have, and under the new collective bargaining agreement, bringing in that third guy, going and getting Chris Paul in a couple years, is going to be so much harder than it is now. And right now it's really hard. You know, look what, to get the big three in Miami, look what Pat Riley basically had to do. He had one guy on the roster, maybe two. I mean, he had to strip it that far down. It's not going to be, oh, now we'll just go get Chris Paul. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be very hard. So you have to be sure that these are the two guys you want, because you've now given up a number of good role players. I mean, Gallinari could be a star. You know, he's got a lot of potential. He could be a star, maybe an all-star guy. Wilson Chandler's nice. Look, they're a good group of role players. They're the good kind of guys you want to fit around your talent and really start to excel. If you strip those guys out, you're going to be trying to bring in guys at the minimum. You're going to have a hard time filling out that roster, and you've got your two guys. And the ultimate question becomes, are you better off going with these two guys? Is Melo the guy, or do you try to hold off and see if you can get Chris Paul or Deron Williams in a year? Is that a better fit?
Right. And I think
we spoke about that, Paul. One of the things that we were speaking about was, if you're, you know, can they land that third player with the cap room, and does this maybe reset, you know, the Knicks, you know, in a situation like that Miami is in?
Yeah, I think that but the flip side of that is in Miami. You know, Boston's older. The Lakers are kind of there, but they're older. You know, they've got a window of a couple more years. Miami's in under that window. Whatever, you know, we don't know what the new cap, the new collective bargaining agreement is going to look like. What we can pretty much be sure of is that it's going to be tougher than this one. The cap will be lower. Teams will have a harder time spending money. I think the thing is, we say you can't bring in that third guy, but under the new system, nobody's going to be able to bring in a third guy. And that kind of gives Miami an advantage for a few years, but nobody else is going to be able to build like that. You know, it's not like somebody else is going to have some easy time doing it. Everybody's going to be playing under the same new rules. So, you know, you're going to have two guys. You're going to have two, you know, really good guys, really two guys who can put up some points. You're still going to need to find somebody who can protect the rim. And I'm as big a Roni Turiaf fan as you're ever going to find. You know, I watched him in Summer League when they drafted him, and he was literally leaping over chairs to get, you know, balls flying out of bat in Summer League. And you're like, I like that guy. But he's
right.
a back guy. Now, he is the ultimate, he's the perfect big energy guy off the bench. You know, your first big off the bench, he's going to get some blocks, get some points, hustles a lot, changes the energy of the game. But he's not a starter. He can't, his body doesn't put up with it. He can't carry you like that. They've got, in today's NBA, with the way you can't touch anybody on the perimeter and, you know, as we like to say, you know, Chris Paul can't guard Chris Paul in this system. It doesn't matter how fast you are. You can't stay in front of guys like that. You've got to have a big who protects the rim, and that's the next thing the Knicks really have to get, no matter how much defense they play. They've got to get somebody who can soak up that middle a little bit.
And now, Kurt, does this get taken care of before the weekend's out, or do we have to wait probably to a deadline on Thursday?
No. It will happen. My guess is that they will, by the end of Sunday, everybody, all the players will know, like the players, I mean the players involved in the drama will know, and we'll find leaks of it Sunday night, Monday. You know, it'll start to hit the press because they still have moves to make, you know. Wherever they send him, whether it's Billups is involved in the deal or not, then they've got to send out Billups. There's a lot, they're now in full rebuilding mode. They've got people coming after, you know, Nene. They've got people coming after J.R. Smith. They're going to have to do something. So they're going to make some
right.
moves, you know, one way or the other.
And so right now, Kurt,
they can't do that, you know, overnight. They're going to need a couple days.
Right. And right now, Kurt, the trading deadline is Thursday. Are you hearing anything out there in L.A.?
You know, there's not a lot. There's some Anthony Parker interest. A couple teams, the Bulls and the Celtics, are a little interested in bringing in some depth. You know, the Bulls need a two guard, and I don't know that Parker's a whole lot better than anything they got, but he's another body. The Celtics, you know, with Marquise Daniels out, they'd like, you know, a little more depth over there. So they're talking about that, but there's really not much. I mean, I don't know how much of that is the new cap coming, and teams just not, you know, trying not to try to keep their own expiring contracts, trying to save a little space,
right.
save a little money. And I don't know how much of it is a Carmelo Anthony bottleneck. Like, once that trade goes through, does a bunch of other stuff open up because guys were held up in deals, you know, potentially? Does Rip Hamilton get moved because the Pistons are still hoping to jump in somewhere, you know? So there's I don't know, but I'll tell you that the buzz this year, and there's a lot of talk, but, like, substantive talk is down. There's not the kind of serious talk you normally hear at the All-Star break. Just a lot
right.
of a lot more flapping lips.
And Kurt, right now we are at the unofficial midpoint of the NBA season. Derrick Rose, big 42-point performance against the Spurs Thursday night, averaging 25 points, 8 assists a game. Is he the MVP at this point, at the midpoint?
You know, he's not in my book, and I've had this out. I actually wrote this and got plenty of heat from Bulls fans. You know, I think he, with that game against the Spurs in particular, vaulted himself into the conversation. He's right there. And I wouldn't be surprised Sunday night, because, you know, who wins the MVP at the All-Star game is the guy who decides he wants to win the MVP at the All-Star game. Nobody's playing defense. So it's whoever just kind of takes control of the ball and decides he wants it. I wouldn't be surprised if it's Rose, as he tries to kind of bulk up his image a little bit.
Right.
That said, you know, he put himself in the conversation, but I think I'm still partial, A, to LeBron James, who's still the best player in the game and has kept numbers up and really made the Heat his team. The other guy I think gets overlooked, and I'll also throw in guy that gets overlooked, is Dwight Howard. But my guy who keeps getting overlooked, the guy I think is really changed the fortune of his team and put up huge numbers, Chris Paul. You know, how bad were they without him last year? How good are they with him this year? He's very efficient. He's getting points. He's getting assists. He's kind of doing it under the radar because they're never on national television. I think their first national television game is in March. But that guy is tearing up the league this year. And, there was a lot of talk for a year when he was kind of injured. Oh, Deron Williams is the best point guard. You know, Derrick Rose is trying to assert himself into that. You watch Chris Paul for a while. Chris Paul is still the point guard in the league. And I think he has to be in that conversation as well.
Well, Kurt, you know, one of the things with Derrick Rose and Paul and I were talking about the Bulls team in general, what's going to happen with them down the stretch. And I think for Rose, much of his statuship in this league will be determined what happens this year, where they seed in the playoffs, how he's able to manage the pressure of being in that LeBron James, Paul Pierce, Dwight Howard stratosphere.
I agree. They're going to be a really interesting team in the playoffs this year. And the thing is, I don't know how good the Bulls are yet because I haven't seen them at full strength for any stretch of ground, you know? It's like they've got a great record. They're playing killer D, but how good are they? They could be very, very good, and we just don't know yet.
Right.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And right now they're missing Noah.
One of the things
right now you have Noah's out, so...
It's going to be interesting to see what happens with that Bulls team in comparison to the quote-unquote heavyweight of Miami and Boston. When everyone's saying, you know, but don't forget about Chicago, well, let's see how they're going to be able to manage the stress, you know, in 2 months.
Yeah, I agree. And they may be a year away, and they may be a two-guard away from really contending. But I think they're closer. I think they're closer than Orlando is right now. You know, I think the Bulls have made themselves the third best team in the East. I'm not sure that they can get by Miami or Boston right now, as long as Boston can stay healthy or healthier.
We're talking to Kurt Healing, ProBasketballTalk.com. Kurt, you're out there on the West Coast enjoying the All-Star festivities. Who do you got for a dunk contest tonight?
You know, it's really, you know, it's one of those races, you know, like if you're going to compare it to horse racing, where there's a horse that's like 1 to 15. And, look, Blake Griffin is a beast. And I don't think you can question, like, his ability to dunk or his athleticism. You know, what happens when he gets on a stage and does these kind of stage dunks as opposed to in-game dunks? That's kind of a question. My dark horse is DeMar DeRozan's good. I think he... You know, he underwhelmed last year because everybody was pretty unimpressive in that dunk contest last year. But I think he learned some lessons, you know. And when he's the six, you know, the little guy at 6'7", but when he's the relatively normal-sized guy in NBA terms, going up against all these big, tall guys, he could come off as the, for lack of a better word, the kind of Spud Webb, Nate Robinson guy. I mean, he's the guy I think sneaks through. JaVale McGee is also a wild card because...
Yeah.
You saw him. I mean, I was out at USA camp where he kept getting called. You know, they kept dropping things because Kevin Love got out and Burton went out and Tyson Dia. All these guys kept dropping, and they kept Tyson Chandler. But all these other, you know, Amari was out. All these guys were leaving. So they kept keeping JaVale McGee around for a lot of that camp. And Chauncey Billups told me, a couple other guys told me, I didn't realize what a freak athlete this guy was because he's never mentally in the game or not consistently. But when he's focused, he's an absolute freak of nature, athlete. And, you know, John Hollinger from ESPN last night had a great line when a group of us hang out. He goes, you know, JaVale McGee could win the dunk contest or he could pull up and take a 17-footer. You know, he could do both. And we don't know what he's going to do, but he's kind of a wild card. But I think it's going to be tighter than people think. But, man, it's just hard to pick against Griffin in his hometown where the crowd's going to be geeked for him.
And real quickly now, Kurt, we have the situation with the 2011 Naismith Hall of Fame finalists, and Reggie Miller was not a part of that list. Your thoughts on that?
It's just another in a long line of reasons that there needs to be an NBA-only Hall of Fame. You know, it's just hard, and I was saying this to someone last night, it's like, I don't want to knock Tara Vandermeer, who's the Stanford women's coach and has led them to national titles, and is a fantastic women's basketball coach. How do you compare even, you know, somebody like Reggie Miller or even Jamal Wilkes or some of the guys, you know, the guy who's got on that list who has to get into me is Dennis Rodman. I mean, maybe the greatest rebounder the game has ever seen. These guys, how do you compare that to what a college women's basketball coach does? I mean, I understand it's all basketball, but it's really hard for me to, you know, all in one Hall of Fame. I think the NBA kind of needs their own, and this is just another sign of kind of how messed up their voting is. It's like we can have a debate about whether Reggie Miller really belongs in the Hall, if he's a little bit one-dimensional. If you know, there's a discussion to be had there, but there isn't a discussion about whether he should be on the list over Ralph Sampson.
Right, I agree, But like you said, it comes down to Samson's college career. And being
that
this is not an NBA-only Hall of Fame, Ralph Sampson's name is one of the finalists. Kurt,
yeah.
I want to thank you for stopping by today, sir. Hopefully you enjoy yourself. All-star weekend, have fun.
I'm about to walk into Staples as we speak, and I'll talk to you guys soon.
Take care, sir. Enjoy.
Take care, man.
All right. Bye-bye. It certainly brings up a good point about an NBA-only Hall of Fame. It seems kind of awkward coming out of 2 weeks ago last week when we were certainly rooting on and looking at the NFL Hall of Fame, and he brings up a lot of names who certainly have been overlooked and the report of Reggie Miller. For a league that has certainly vaulted itself to a popular fan base, It is a little bit of an anomaly.
Let's stop for a second. I am here. If you look at NBA basketball right now, it's a decent product. It's not as bad as people say it is. You got guys. You got a lot of superstars: LeBron James, Kobe Bryant, Dwayne Wade, Dwight Howard, Kevin Durant. You got a lot of superstars, a lot of young superstars in the NBA, and so. I know I hear the argument, oh, it's not the same fundamentally, and so on and so forth, but these guys are freakishly athletic, and they, some of the guys who have played in the past would have a hard time playing now because of the athletes that we have in the NBA today. So, yes, the NBA has some issues, but, the reality of it, it's a decent product. If you really sit down and watch the NBA, it's still a decent product in my mind. That's just what I feel about the NBA. But you're right. He does make a good point, being that the Naismith Hall of Fame is just basketball in general. Guys like Reggie Miller, who is a Hall of Fame, a legitimate Hall of Famer in my mind, is not a finalist. That is a problem there, but. Ultimately,
Reggie
will be a Hall of Famer.
Just a matter of way. I think for the NBA, it's somewhat, I don't want to say concerning, but it's awkward because, to me, they've made the majority of their success has been laid on, getting fans to see these players and to not recognize how important even a guy like Dennis Rodman, as Kurt just mentioned, is to the history of the game. It's surprising in a way that they're really not that concerned that they don't have that second or that other celebration and maybe celebrating the long-term history, of basketball, NBA basketball, I should say, and certainly the players. I get you and I, though, we differ a little bit on the status of the NBA today, but my point was more or less, I thought, for a league that was very, I thought, marketing savvy, not having their own Hall of Fame, to me, I'll question that from a business standpoint. There's money to be made in the Hall of Fame, Paul.
Sure there is. Maybe this will change something. You never know. But again, you are surprised when a guy like Reggie Miller is not a finalist. One of the, he was a very clutch shooter in his day. And a guy who, unfortunately, one of those guys who ran into Michael Jordan. He kept running into Michael Jordan. And then when you run into Michael
Jordan. Before we move on, I got to hear this because we were bringing up the slam dunk contest and this Blake Griffin. Before I give my opinion or my bashing, but what do you make of the hoopla of this guy, Paul? Do you see him? Is anything more than just a Sports Center filler? They have done very well.
No. He's a lot more than just a Sports Center filler. The guy is 20-10. That's a lot more than a Sports Center filler in my mind. Granted, we see the big highlights, the big dunks, and all that jazz. But the reality of it is, this guy is 20-10. More specifically, he's averaging 12 boards a game. 12 boards a game to go along with 22 points a game. So 22 and 12. That's a little more than just dunks and what have you. This guy is more than the sports that are highlight. Believe the hype. This guy is great. This guy is a very good player. He's not great yet, because greatness is over a period of time. But he is very good. I mean, he is more than just sports center highlight. He is more than just dumb. He is more than all that. This guy is legitimate. 22 and 12. That's legitimate. That's legitimate. He's 20 and 10. And as far as I'm concerned, that is a lot more than just sports center height. That's legit.
Okay.
So apparently you must think that
I think to say 20 and 10 again, it does show, Paul is certainly able to throw out a number without statistical relevance. In a league that is without defense, to me, 20 and 10, Paul, that mattered maybe 10 years ago.
20 and 10 on grown trees.
That mattered 10 years, Paul. That mattered 10 years 20 ago.
That matters any year. 20 and 10 does not grow on trees.
Okay.
I mean, you don't grow that on trees. You do grow that in a stomach, a woman's stomach, but you don't grow that on trees. And as far as Blake Griffin, he is legit.
He needs a jumper, Paul.
And 12.
He's
more than just a dunker. I mean, regardless if he's just a dunker, he's still 22 and 12. And let's just say he's just a dunker. Does have to improve on his outside game. But he has some range. But let's just go on the premise that he is a dunker, 22 and 12. Those are numbers that you can't argue with.
I agree with you. I will say he has done himself well on the foothills of, as you keep reminding me, 20 and 12, and I don't want to get it twisted. You put up 20 and 10 your whole career. Certainly, you have nothing to be ashamed about. But to me, if you're a smart athlete, that's not. I mean, he really to me has a lot more work to do, I think, than people are letting him believe.
He does have work to do. He does have to work on a jump shot. He does have to work on that. But again, 22 and 12 on just sheer ability at this point. Now let's imagine when this whole thing comes together, when it really comes together.
If it comes together.
But when it comes together. Just imagine when this whole thing comes together. 22 and 12. Though that doesn't grow on trees. Grows in women's stomach, but it doesn't grow on trees.
All right, man, all right.
Is that what you're looking for? 22 and 12 is legitimate.
I'm getting a little sick of hearing about him. I think the Clippers have much to rejoice about. They have a little team. I'm happy for them. I'm sure Clipper Daryl will be on soon to remind us, what's going on out there. But all in all, I think he's a great athlete. But I think that's my problem with this NBA, is that that's all it's about now, is athleticism. There's the talent inside of the NBA, to me, a guy like Blake Griffin, he is certainly, they're making him out to be like a Derrick Rose. And it's almost, it's mind-boggling.
Well, 22 and 12 is 22 and 12.
And it grows a woman's stomach. We know, Paul. Move on.
We all know that. I mean, we obviously know that.
Wow.
But 22 and 12 is 22 and 12. And say what you will about Blake Griffin in terms of him just being a dunker, a sports on a highlight reel. A little more than just a sports on a highlight reel in my mind. A lot more than just a sports on a highlight reel. And I think when it's all said and done, this guy is going to be one of the faces of the league moving forward. And I'm looking forward to a dunk contest. I want to see what he has up his sleeve. I want to see what he has up his sleeve tonight and what he's going to deliver. I mean, he is in L.A., so an L.A. Clipper, the All-Star game is in L.A., so I think that's going to help Blake tonight, and I think that's ultimately going to be the reason Blake Griffin wins tonight, because of the crowd in L.A., and because he's just a great dunker. He's going to get it done tonight. So I'm looking forward to the dunk contest tonight, and I think it should be very, very exciting. It should be very interesting to see who wins this dunk contest. Will it be Blake Griffin, or is it JaVale McGee, DeMar DeRozan? Who is it going to be? Who do we have tonight? I mean, it should be interesting to see how this plays out. Is it going to be Serge Ibaka? So it should be interesting to see how this thing works out and see if Blake Griffin will be the Slam Dunk Contest winner this year.
It's just going to be certainly at the NBA dunk contest are most enjoyable. I know we're soon going to switch gears and move back. Look at me, you know, and then what's next in sports? Shortly to be joined by. So when you look though, and look at this NBA season, certainly you and I, Paul, you had the Packers. Kudos to Paul. I know we looked at that last week, but it's an interesting off season. The negotiations seem. I think I look at it from the business standpoint of what's going to happen in a global perspective of professional sports, and we're seeing that now. Yesterday and this week, there was talk now moving over to the NBA because of an impending lockout in the NBA, and I think. You know, it was interesting to hear Derek Fisher come out and basically talk about the fact and defend guaranteed contracts in the NBA and the need for guaranteed contracts in the NBA when you're looking at the NFL and their labor agreements and how, as I keep saying, you know, we have talked globally, this will affect the marketplace of professional sports because, you know, much is being made so far. Peyton Manning was franchised. Michael Vick was franchised. And I think, you know, for Peyton Manning, I wouldn't be happy if a deal doesn't get done. And the reason I'm going to say that, you know, it's different for Michael Vick. I mean, if you're a guy like Peyton Manning, you get injured here. Certainly you get $20 million, but it does hurt your market value potentially for a longer term deal. Although, you have to believe the Colts want to get a long-term deal done, irregardless of a lockout. But then the flip side of that coin, here's a guy, Michael Vick, now, certainly, to me, puts him in a very advantageous position. He comes out this year almost, I think they say, $15, $20 million range in a contract. And then if he plays, I don't – even think he needs to hit the level he was at last year, but certainly if he can hit that level or, you know, at that level, go above that level, he is looking at, I mean, a payday that could be freakish for him. Based on certainly the caveat of that is what they do in a labor market. But these negotiations with the NBA and the players, I think it's certainly interesting to see how the owners of this new NFL is starting to, I think, recognize because, you know, you look at the fact that, to me, they're going to get this deal done. And not locking out means, I think the NBA owners are going to start to soften their stance, if you will, and recognize they are the ones who potentially need these players maybe more than these players need the ownership. Because I'm looking at the NBA. I think it's very telling that, you know, when you look at defensively posturing, here you have an NFL group of players who have really yet to talk about the lack of comparability, if you will, league to league. But the NBA players are smart coming out and defending, you know, where they – how they earn their money, and you're certainly watching the same being done in the NBA. And I think the ownership groups are trying, Paul, I'm interested to see what you think, but they're certainly trying, I think,
to keep this as quiet and low-key as possible.
But I think at the end of the day, reality of these labor agreements in terms of NBA, NFL, what have you, I think it's going to come down to the final hour. And it ultimately will get done, especially, I mean, both leagues, you don't want to stop anything at this point. But if you look at the NFL right now, I mean, they're just printing money. I mean, they're just printing money. I mean, they're very popular. Fantasy leagues, suicide pools. It's just a part of what Americans do. That's the National Football League. They're at the top. The ratings are off the charts. Super Bowl is essentially a holiday. So why would you lock that out? Why would you lock that out? So, I mean, I hope they have to get this thing taken care of. You got to take care of the situation. Because the reality of it is, again, you are printing money if you're an NFL owner. You're just printing money left and right. Left and right. And in terms of the NBA, you don't want to stop the league right now, especially a league that's not as popular as the NFL right now, and a league that, if there is a lockout, could suffer. Now, granted, both of these leagues would rebound if there is a lockout. But again, why stop the momentum? You got
momentum in both leagues. Let me stop you there, financially and historically, the lockouts, forget about the money. The lockouts, historically, it hurts future value. It hurts future growth. Because what certainly is a teller in all that, and who will kill it, who killed it, what was it, 5 or 6 years ago in the NBA, maybe longer than that, in the NBA, is the media. And you have to remember, now, this is, and that's why I say, I think if you're an ownership group now, this is a very scary time because of Twitter, because of Facebook, because now you're going to have players tweeting, probably minute by minute, oh, we could have been playing, sorry fans, blame it on the ownership because we want to be there. And I'm telling you, Paul, you're not going to see even Al Davis on his Twitter saying, oh, no, it wasn't us, it was them. So the ownership now is going to really take the brunt of the bad PR. And the fact that, like you said, the NFL, if any league, is at the height of its popularity. And look at where the NBA was when they went into the lockout season. It was shortened. I think ultimately it just rings in a new generation. People become more conscious. Fans become more conscious of how financially driven these leagues really are and how much theoretical money is at stake has really yet to come out. But when they start to strike, I think you'll start to see players being, I think, a little bit more savvy and using the Facebooks and the Twitters to the owner's detriment. I would not want to be an ownership group when you have a player who's basically going to be able to say anything they want and a fan base who's really not feeling to do anything about it.
But I think at the end of the day, there's really not much sympathy from the general public with any of these guys. I mean, you got millionaires fighting billionaires, essentially. So, who has sympathy for millionaires and billionaires, especially in this economy, especially when you have an unemployment rate as high as it is, especially when you have people who are losing jobs and can't find jobs. So the reality of it is there won't be sympathy from the outside public when it comes to millionaires fighting billionaires. So I just think right now, if you look at this, why stop the momentum that you have in both leagues? Why stop it? Work this thing out, not only for the short-term future of the game, but for the long-term future of the game. I mean, the game has been good to a lot of these players and a lot of these owners. So work this thing out. Make this thing right. I mean, the game has been good to you. Make it work. And, you got all these minds involved in these negotiations. You have to make this work. You have to make it work. And I just think the way things are, and, again, with the economy being what it is, there won't be sympathy from the general public. There will not be any sympathy whatsoever from the general public because the reality of it is, again, you're a millionaire, and now you're deciding to get into a fight with a billionaire. Make this work.
sort this thing out. Get it done. Get it done. You got to get it done. You got to get this thing done. If you don't get it done, you're going to lose the momentum that you've had. You're going to lose the momentum that you've had. And you've had a lot of momentum, and you've had a lot of money coming your way. Don't mess that up. Don't mess that whole situation up. Why mess it up? We don't have to mess it up. Where you guys can hopefully come together and just get this thing right. Please, please, please get this thing right. Because the fans love the NBA. They love the NFL. And they don't want to see it stop. They don't want the momentum to stop. Because they love it just as much as you do. So they don't want to see this thing stop. And so right now I think ultimately, hopefully, these guys will clean, get this thing done, agree on something, and move on. Please, get it done. Labor peace in 2011. We're expected to be joined by Desmond Clark, Bears tight end. Desmond should be able to get his take on his season this year, and also the whole Jay Cutler thing. So we're waiting on Desmond to call on in and give us his thoughts, and I'm definitely looking forward to that one. So as we look around the lovely world of sports, and we have to focus on right now pitchers and catchers. It's pitchers and catchers time in MLB baseball, and position player reported on Friday. And in the Philadelphia area, and essentially is the buzz of baseball, is the big four of Hamels, Holiday, Oswalt, and Cliff Lee right now. So everyone's talking about it. There's a big buzz in the air in terms of baseball, in terms of those big four of Hamels, of Holiday, of Oswalt, and of Cliff Lee. And right now, if you look at the Phillies, I mean, some have compared this pitching staff to what happened in Miami with that big three of Bosh, Wade, and LeBron. And then if you look at it, I mean, you're not going to have a day off if you're opposing hitters going up against Lee. You're not going to get a day off going up against Hamels. You're not going to get a day off going up against Holiday. And you won't get a day off going up against Roy Oswalt. And if Phil Blaine is the fifth starter, not a bad fifth starter, you're going to have some hard times there. So, I mean, there is no way, shape, or form that the Phillies should not have the best record in baseball. And there's no way that this team should not, at the least, win their division. Let's start at the least win the division. And, you know, once you get into the playoffs, anything is possible, especially in the MLB playoffs, because I don't think the best team always wins in baseball. I don't think the Giants were a better baseball team than the Phillies. But at the end of the day, they did what they had to do in time, and at the right times. But I don't, if I look at it on paper, I don't think the Giants were a better team than the Phillies. But, I mean, if you look at it, pitchers and catchers are here. Position players are there in Florida, enjoying the sunny weather in Florida. I mean, I'm a little jealous here being in the East Coast and dealing with what we have to deal with, but it hasn't been too bad, actually. Yesterday was 65 degrees. So,
here's the question, though. The one thing I look at, and I was saying this actually the other day, the only hot spot, if you will, of this Philadelphia Phillies pitching rotation, to me, is Cole Hamels, the wild card, if you will. How is he going to now take the theoretical demotion, if you will, to a fourth starter? I mean, does he look at this by saying, wow, I mean, this could project me in 2-3 years into an even greater pitcher over the next 5 to 7 years because I'm around, you know, a Cliff Lee, a Roy Oswalt, and a Holiday? Or just, you know, do the wrong people get in his ear and say, you need to get out of here. Your talent needs to be, you're a number one. Because remember, Paul, you know, professional athletes, is that's the world of that is the true world of me. So, you know, how
well,
will
I don't think the egos will get in the way here in this situation. I mean, whether you're second,
are you saying
third,
that because
starter.
You're from Philadelphia? Are you saying that because we're from Philadelphia?
I just don't think egos will get in the way here. I mean, if you look at it, if you're a fourth starter, you know what? As a fourth starter, you're going up against other opposing fourth starters. Guess what? That's an opportunity to pad your record. Guess what? That's an opportunity to get more wins, and ultimately that's a possibility for you to get more money. So that's a good situation for you.
Fourth, third, fourth
starter going up against opposing third and fourth starters when you're, on some teams, the number one starter.
Or, though, Paul, and you know as well as I do, or could the wrong person say to him, you know, vis-a-vis maybe his wife, or maybe his wife winds on some reality show. I mean, we've had enough of those people on the airways. Somebody's saying to him, you are not a number four. Cole Hamels is truly not a number four starter in this league. If somebody, I mean, it reminds him of that, and he believes it, you know, or he gets off to a bad start. Just the guy, remember, Paul, 2 years ago, did not have a very strong season. So gets off maybe to a shaky start, and somebody says to him, but this is because of your rotation. This is because of, look, see what they're doing. This is because of where you are in the rotation. And again, it gets in his ear. He doesn't like potentially what he's hearing. And now I think, to me, that's why I say, if there is a weakness of this team, I think the true weakness of this team could be jealousy. It could be maybe Ryan, a guy like Ryan Howard, who says, you know, what about me? I'm the offensive, you know, you have Lee back in town. He's the man. You have Holiday coming off an incredible season. And now you have a guy like Ryan Howard who basically doesn't even get talked about. Or you have, you know, who knows? J. Roll may mid-season, won an extension. I think the only thing when you look at a team this talented is how well are they going to – because this is an ownership group – Rivera, Paul, much maligned in this city 5 years, you know, prior to 5 years ago, was probably the worst ownership group potentially in the history of major league of all owners. And how well are they going to manage all of this talent?
Well, I can't. I mean, I think he goes. I mean, this is a championship team back in 2008. I think Eagles will be left at the door. I really do, and I just think everybody here wants to win. And I think you also have to look at the situation with Jason Worth. You have to replace that position. Is it Dominic Brown? Is it Ben Francisco? Is it going to be John Mayberry Jr.? I mean, who replaces Worth in the lineup? I mean, so that's going to be a situation they have to address.
Well,
I mean, Jason Worth,
they have not, and oddly enough, Paul, I'm sure you know as well, they have not ruled out seeing what else is out there, you know, in the marketplace, so to speak. They do have minor. I think the issues they have. It's an exciting time, you know, when you think about this. You and I both growing up in this area. It's exciting in the last, you know, 5-6 years to see this become the talk of Philadelphia baseball. You know, these are problems. I think even, you know, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, we would have loved to have. And I mean, over the last 5 years, they have won, as you said, the World Championship, and they're fighting. And even last year, you know, it was an incredible season. This year, certainly, to basically look at this and say there's no reason, you know, they aren't going to do what the Yankees are normally doing, which is wire to wire, you know, first place, just destroy the entire league.
With this pitching, there's no way that should not happen. There's just no way that should not happen. But again, you never know. You never know. But I just don't think it'll happen. There's no way. The team, it may not be wire to wire, but I mean, it's going to be pretty close. It's going to be pretty close with this pitching staff and what they already have in terms of hitting in their lineup. So I just don't think that it'll happen. But we'll definitely see. Transpired now. We're actually now being joined by Bears tight end Desmond Clark. Desmond, how are you today, sir?
I'm doing pretty good. How you doing?
Pretty good, pretty good. Desmond, coming into the season, your Bears was a team that my co-host Jeremy both felt would have improved. Looking at it now, did you have a good feeling going into this season?
Oh, definitely. We had a good feeling just from the outside looking in. I don't think it was a whole lot of people that believe in us outside of the team. But we thought that we had the necessary pieces and parts to put together a pretty good team. And as you've seen, we did make a good run this year. Kind of fell short that end, but overall, I think it was a pretty good season.
And now, Desmond, you know, going into the season, the Bears hired offensive coordinator Mike Marks. Did you think with the hiring of Marks that you would have more of an opportunity that you actually had this season?
Well, I mean, once he was hired, then going through OTAs and training camp and everything, being named a starter in training camp, you know, I thought that I would play a pretty prominent role in the offense, but I don't know what happened between training camp, and the start of the season, but something obviously happened, which I still don't know what happened. I never got an explanation for it. Anybody to come talk to me and say this is the reason why I would not play you, but I did think I have a pretty prominent role up until about the second or third game into the season when I kind of seen that I wasn't going to be used a whole lot. And then in that fourth game, I was actually inactive, but it was a shock because, like I said, I had a pretty good off season. I had a pretty good training camp. I really feel out of all the tight ends, I probably had the best training camp out there, and you'll find a lot of people that will support that. So I don't know what happened. Still don't know what happened to this day.
So Desmond, how do you, as a player, coming off of the season you had in 2009, they bring in a coordinator who is very noted in the league. How do you, you know, week in, week out, and now especially in the off season, you know, where do you go from there? How do you make it through the season, and where do you go into the 2011 season?
Well, how I made it through the season is simple, man. I go out and do my job every day. And, you know, I had some days better than other days when I was pissed off or whatever because of the situation. But the bottom line is that I have a job to do, and that's what I did. And my job was basically being a scout team tight end or a scout team receiver for most of the year. So, I mean, I went out and bust my ass, and I did that. And every day in practice, I wanted to let them see that or show them that, you know, I'm still a playmaker. And I think I did that in practice because not only did my fellow teammates tell me each and every day how good of a player I was and what I was doing out there on the field, should warn me playing, but I also had coaches telling me that I was doing a very good job and the same thing. So, but, you know, it goes deeper than just, okay, this guy's not playing me, so I'm going to just lay down. No, I mean, I'm a man first, and I'm going to stand up for what I believe in, and I believe a man, you know, they should work for their paycheck. So I went out and I worked for my paycheck every day. Although people didn't see me out there doing it on Sundays, I did it throughout the weekend. And if they decided not to play me on Sunday, you know, that's something that I couldn't control. But going into this season, I mean, I'm on hold just like everybody else. I'll become a free agent this year if the Bears decide not to do anything with me before March 4th. So I'll be on hold just like everybody else. So I'm just in that holding pattern.
Now, did you talk to Lovie Smith or Mike Marks about your role throughout the season?
Yeah, I talked to everybody. I talked to the general manager. I talked to Lovie Smith. I talked to Mike Marks. And all of them told me I was doing exactly what I needed to do. And my question was always, well, why am I not on the field? So, and that question never got answered. So, I mean, you know, like I say, it's something that I'm still baffled by. I still don't understand, and I still haven't gotten the answer for. But once we got to that bye week, and I went and talked to all those guys individually, and I couldn't get the answer to why I wasn't playing. You know, I wanted to know, was it something that I did, something that I didn't do? Is it something on the field that I'm not doing? And they assured me it was none of those things. It was just situational. And, you know, so when I heard that and I, you know, I really didn't get an answer for anything that I was asking. I just left it alone, and I just decided I was just going to go out and just show them on the practice field what I could do, and that's what I did every week. I think if you ask every coach up there, man for man, they'll tell you that that what I did every day was good enough to play on Sunday.
And now, Desmond, your Bears, you guys got off to a 4-1 start. I mean, you were 4-3 after having two bad losses against Seattle and Washington going into the bye week. But you guys came back with a 5-game winning streak, including a victory over the Philadelphia Eagles. Who gets the credit for that? What did you guys do in that bye week that made you, that propelled you into that 5-game winning streak?
Well, I mean, everybody gets credit for that. The coaches, the players, everybody. I mean, just like you say, I don't understand how people say, you know, well, you lost two games that you shouldn't have lost, but then, you know, how can you sit and lose a game? These guys are professional players like us, and then we go out and you know, win some games that we, you know, people thought that we shouldn't have won. It all works itself out. I mean, you know, you're going to do that every year. You're going to lose one, maybe two games that you shouldn't have won, or you're going to lose or win one or two games that you probably wasn't favored to win. That's just the way it is. So I don't think anything was wrong with anything that we was doing. I think we just got better at what we were doing as a team. The coaches got better. So I think the credit goes, I mean, to the whole team. It wasn't like just one or two people that pushed buttons and everything was fine. I mean, the coaches went back and they reevaluated everything. They came back and let us know, you know, what they seen from the first half of the season. We had to get better as individual football players to take it out there on the football field and show and prove that we were a good team. So everybody gets the credit for that.
We're talking with Desmond Clark, Chicago Bears tight end. Jeremy, go ahead.
You brought up an interesting point about the coaching staff and players kind of owning up, I think, to their potential and their responsibility. This Bears team, certainly, though, looks like it has the markings of a very long-term competitive team. How important, I think, for you, though, is it going to be – do you want to come back and kind of write – worship with this Bears team, or going into this offseason, are you looking at saying, you know what, maybe it's time that you, a change of pace, it would be good for you?
Well, I don't have to write any ship. My ship is right. I mean, if you walk into that Chicago Bears organization, into that building, there's no one in there going to say anything negative about me. There's no one going to say anything about I lost a step this year. There's no one going to say that I had a bad attitude. There's no one going to say that we didn't like Dez because. No one can say that. So it's no ship that I have to write. You know, it's really on them. Do they want me back or not? I mean, I feel good about going back. I held up my end of the bargain all year. So it's nothing that I will have to change to say, okay, yeah, I will go back if. No, it's if they want me back. So the ball is in their court. Like I said, man, I earned my paycheck every week, and I think I did everything like a man should do it. I didn't say anything, even though, you know, some stuff I felt wasn't right. I mean, so be it. I still gotta go out and do my job. So to go back and want to write the ship, I don't need to write any ship. I just, if they want me back, I'll be very happy to go back.
And now, Desmond, you guys were the number two seed going into the playoffs. You were 11-5, and you were facing the Seattle Seahawks in the divisional round, a team that you beat in the regular season. Did revenge play a role in that performance?
Well, actually, they beat us in that regular season.
I'm sorry.
Who cares at that point? We just trying to advance. Nobody's looking at where they beat us in the regular season. That's like Pop Warner type stuff, high school
right.
type stuff. Oh, they beat us, so now we gotta beat them. We don't matter. It don't matter at all. We just trying to get to that next round. It didn't matter who we were playing. If it was a team that we already beat before, we're not gonna go in thinking, okay, we already beat them, so we're gonna beat them again. No, it's all about beating them just to get to that next round. You know, we knew coming in that they could beat us if we didn't play our best game like we did early on in the season. And we came out and we played a pretty good football game, and we beat them soundly, and, you know, we felt like we played like we should have, and, you know, that was that. It wasn't any revenge or anything like that. I mean, we ended up with the number two seed in the NFC, so, I mean, however it worked out, it worked out pretty good for us.
Yeah, definitely. And you guys would go on, you beat the Seattle Seahawks, and you would ultimately go on to face the Green Bay Packers. I want to rewind to Week 17 when you guys played the Packers. The Packers needed that victory to get in. Now, was it your mindset going into that Week 17 game to beat that team, or was it to kind of just rest some of the guys and let's go to the playoffs?
Well, obviously it wasn't to rest some of the guys. None of the guys rested. We played all our starters, you know, four quarters in that game. And, you know, we wanted to win the game just for the fact of winning the game. I know a lot of people was looking at it like, okay, if we beat them, then they don't get in. And, you know, all that's fine and dandy, yeah. But we just wanted to win the game so we could be sitting at 12-4 instead of 11-5 going into that bye week playing good football. That's mainly what we wanted to do. We wanted to be playing good football going into the bye week and going into the bye week with a win.
Definitely. And if you look at that, you guys, you had the Packers, your arch rival. Was there any extra motivation? Granted, the Super Bowl's on the line, so that may be all the motivation you need. But was there any extra motivation playing the Green Bay Packers, your arch rival?
No. Like you said, you can't get motivated to beat this whoever team to go to the Super Bowl. And if you need extra motivation, then you probably are not worth the weight. So it was just basically we need to beat this team to get to the Super Bowl. I think a lot of that hype comes from the fans' perspective, from the
right.
media's perspective of hyping up the game and this and that. Yeah, it's our arch rival. But it simply came down to we have to beat the Green Bay Packers to get to the Super Bowl, something that we wasn't able to do. It wasn't anything more than that for the Chicago football team all week long. That's all we talked about, is that we have to beat the Green Bay Packers to go to the Super Bowl. And that was the message.
And in that game, Desmond, the Packers fell off to a great start in that game. They were 14-0 going into halftime. Early third quarter, you lose your quarterback, Jay Cutler. Was there anything in the back of your mind saying maybe this just may not be our day?
Not really. All the guys was staying positive, and I remember at one point we were down 14-0, and Olin Cruz got up after Jay went down and said, I don't know how we're going to win this game, but we're going to get it done. And, you know, we had guys like that was just stepping up, reaffirming the fact that we still had enough to go out and beat this team. And, you know, it turned out to be a pretty good game down to the wire. And, you know, they just so happened to make that play down by the end zone to keep us out of the end zone for forcing the overtime. But I don't think anybody really gave up hope that we could come back and win that game until the very end when they made that interception and kind of sealed the deal.
Right. But we're talking to Desmond Clark, Chicago Bears tight end. Now, Desmond, in that game, your quarterback, Jay Cutler, left the game with an MCL injury. And now this is a guy, a diabetic, a guy who was sacked 52 times, the most in the league. So, I mean, any talk of any other players questioning his heart, in my mind, was just wrong. But in looking at it, when you heard the criticism that Cutler received from other players, how did that make you feel?
It made me look at other guys like they're real idiots. They just, not smart people. I mean, for one, you know, they are at home looking at us, so it might be a little jealousy there for them to even say something like that, because you don't go out and criticize one of your own colleagues, one of your own guys that, you know, that's in the same profession as you are without knowing what's going on. I think that was classes. I think, you know, guys just for whatever reason just in that moment just lost it. Like, I'm thinking, like, what are you doing? How can you sit back and criticize somebody for being hurt and then say that he
right.
gave up I mean, it's just people running off at the mouth and really not taking the necessary precautions before they put something out like that and think about what you're saying. Because, I mean, that's serious allegations when you're talking about a professional athlete diving on that whole team and not playing through what everybody perceived, well, not everybody, well, a few guys perceived as a slight injury. I mean, that's probably the biggest slap in the face that you can receive as an athlete. But, you know, those guys, they don't know what's going on the outside line. They don't know what kind of player Jay Cutler is because they never played with him before. So, you know, I look at it for what it is. It's just something idiotic that a few players did that, you know, they made a name for themselves for a couple weeks, and that's about all. They sat home and they watched our game.
And I'm interested because, I mean, what would make a player who may or may not like, you know, I know that Jay Cutler may not have been one of the most likable players maybe outside of Bears locker room. He's known to talk, but for NFL players to say something like that against a guy who essentially is, you know, now with this lockout, part of a greater good, if you will, to put myself in that position, I mean, you're almost talking about someone who is part of a bigger family, and I didn't see the value in that at all, to say, oh, you know, like you said, this guy's taking a dive in the NFC Championship game. It was so illogical, it kind of left me thinking, for what reason would you want to do this other than to put your name out there, to be on SportsCenter, to be on the news, and to be talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I can't say any more clear. It's idiotic. It's like, if he was going to take a dive, he'd have took a dive in one of those 50-some-odd sacks that he had, not in the NFC Championship game. So, I mean, you know, who knows why they did it, and don't really care. I just know it was stupid, and I know that it just shouldn't have been done.
And is that the type of mentality that, in a lot of ways, that we should try to get away from in the NFL? With,
yeah, I mean, I don't even want to talk about that no more, man. Like, why even keep talking about it? It's dumb. It's stupid. It's idiotic. So I don't even want to talk about that no more. That's just dumb.
I agree. I definitely agree. I was just focusing on the mentality of, you know, at this point you have players with the concussions and everything, and you have the older players who are now suffering from various ailments from those concussions and from other injuries. Is the mentality play when you're hurt, even though you can't go? Is that mentality, is that an old school mentality, and maybe a mentality that needs to change?
No. We know what we do. We know the risk that we go out there and play with, and the stuff that we, you know, later on in life that we could be impacting for later on in life. I mean, we know that. I mean, and that's why we get paid the money that we get paid. I mean, you hear people, oh, they make all this money and this and that, but really we out there putting our life on the line. I mean,
right.
You know, you go out there and you blow a knee out this year, 20 years later you're getting a knee replacement and you don't have the quality of life that you have, that you could have if you didn't play this game, you know, when you're 60 and you're still moving around fine, still could go golfing and you, you know, could still go jogging and stuff like that. You know, most of us guys, we won't be able to do that stuff. So we know, I mean, coming into this profession, what we go out there and what we put at risk. And if we're going to be out there, we're going to do everything that we can to be out there to help help whatever team that we're on, to help whatever teammates we have win the game, even if it means that we're out there playing with, you know, a ligament that just hanging on by a thread. If we could go out there and play with it, if we could be out there playing with like a severely sprained ankle that we could be damaging, we know that, and we still do it. It's not an old school mentality. It's just a mind frame that you have to have when you play this game. If you don't have that mind frame to play this game, you're probably not going to be that good of a football player, because you're always going to be banged up. You're always going to be a little bit injured. And the day when it comes where people say, okay, well, I got this injury and I'm just not going to go because I'm, you know, I'm a little injured, then you'll see the quality of the game start dropping off. I mean, people play all the time with injuries and go out there and put on a hell of a show.
And, Desmond, you guys would eventually lose to the Packers 21-14. Looking back at that game and kind of looking at the season, do you think you guys were the better team there?
I think, no, obviously, you know, you have to give them their credit. They came out and they played better than us that day. I think, obviously, they're the best football team in the league. They won the Super Bowl, so you can't take anything away from them. So not that day and not this year, we wasn't a better football team than them. Do we like to think that we could have beat them? Yeah, we do, but we didn't get it done. I think that we match up with any team in the league and could beat any team in the league on any given day. But, you know, you have to get it done on Sunday, and if you don't get it done on Sunday, you can't say that you're a better team than that team.
And Desmond, you do a radio show yourself. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's Sportsmanlike Conduct, and I do that on Voice of America Sports .com every Tuesday, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Me, Fresh, and Scudder, we get on there. It's like just three guys sitting around the table talking sports, you know, drinking out of Gatorade, spitting sunflower seeds. Just have a good time, man. Mostly talk about football, but we dive into any and everything that that anybody wants to talk about. And, you know, we'll get out there and we'll talk some other sports every now and again. But mostly we focus on football, and we just have a good time doing it.
Is that Desmond Clark's future after football?
I think so. I think that's the direction I'm heading in. I believe that it's something that I really love to do. Now I have a lot of things that I do around Chicago with the media, radio, TV, and that type of thing. So I'm pursuing it. But I do have some other interests also out there, and it's just good to have options, and that's one of my options.
And now, Desmond, it is Black History Month, and I just wanted to ask you a question. What historical African-American figure had the most impact on your life?
I think, you know, coming up, it has to be Martin Luther King, because he was the most prominent Black American figure when I was coming. That's who we learned about in schools. To this day, I think that is the person that they teach about most in the history books as far as a Black American, about what he did for the civil rights movement, what he meant to the Black people in this nation, the way he went about doing things. And it you know, for me, he is an example of how you should live your life, how you should stand up for what you believe in, but really how you should go about it. Even though, you know, there's some injustice, it's still work to be done, and you can't stop working. Kind of like I've seen this football season. You know, you got to stand up for what you believe in, but at the same time, you know, it's a way to go about it. It's a way to go about getting your message across without, you know, doing it in other ways that could put people in jeopardy because of your actions. So really, he exemplifies kind of how I try to live my life, man. If it's something that I know that's not right, you know, I'm going to stand up and I'm going to say something, but I'm going to do it in the appropriate and in the right way and do it in the right type of form to get my message across.
And, Desmond, you definitely got your message across today, sir. It was greatly appreciated, sir. We enjoyed having you, and enjoy your off season. I hope you sign with somebody.
Oh, I would definitely will be with somebody. Like I said, I hope it's Chicago, but if not, you know, we'll see.
And any real quick, any concerns about this collective bargaining agreement and the labor agreement?
Not yet. Not yet. You know, if it, I expect us to go into a lockout. You know, that's kind of what we're expecting to happen, but, you know, I don't think it's anything serious at that point. I think once, you know, if we go into the end of April and then we get into May, once we start getting into May and we still don't have anything done, then it's really I think it's time to start worrying then, because obviously we've had a bunch of discussions, and if we're not making some kind of progress, you know, even now, start making progress with the 7 days that they're meeting in a row right now. If they come out of this 7 days in a row, or they don't even go to 7 days, then, yeah, it's time to worry a little bit, because there should be some progress made towards getting the agreement done. Is it all going to be made in the next week or so? I don't think so. I hope it does so we could get back to business as usual. I don't think it will be, but it should be some type of progress made. It should be some kind of recessions given from both the NFL Players Association and also the owners. So we could just get this thing, you know, back in order so we could keep playing this game that has been the best game in America for, you know, a number of years now. And don't mess it up. I mean, really, come on, let's not everybody get greedy and everybody mess something up that's been good for not only the people that own the teams and the people that play for those owners, but also the fans. I mean, the fans, they live and die every Sunday or Thursday night or Saturday, Monday night, whenever we play, they live and die for it. So let's not take that away from them, and let's not take football away from the players either. And for the owners, if they take it away from us, they're also going to be taking money out of their pocket. So everybody has a lot to lose here. So let's get it together and get it right so we'll have football when football is supposed to start this year.
Agreed. And Desmond, tell us again where we can hear your radio show.
Yes, on voiceamerica.com. You can log on there, www.voiceamericasports.com. Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's Sportsmanlike Conduct every Tuesday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Desmond, again, it was a pleasure, sir. We'd love to have you back in the future, and good luck on this offseason, and good luck with your radio show.
I appreciate it, gentlemen. Y'all take it easy.
Take care.
Yes, sir.
Desmond Clark, Chicago Bears tight end, about to be a free agent, and we'll see what happens in this upcoming NFL season and whether or not there will be a season. Hopefully there will be. Your thoughts on some of the things you heard from Desmond Clark, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, I think the last part of what he said was the most, important. His plea, if you will, was most appropriate. I think they need to get it right. I was very impressed, though, with how he held his guns with the Bears. It was impressive to hear a guy who went through those kind of trials and tribulations during the season and basically say he was just happy with the way, you know, he went about, you know, his practice and playing in each game, his preparation.
Definitely. I mean, he was a guy who was deactivated for 11 games this year, so he kept his head up and he kept going, kept moving, and ultimately he was a professional about it, and so you definitely have to give him credit for that. Another few more minutes left in the show. Again, it was a pleasure being joined by Desmond Clark, and again, you can check out his radio show at voiceofamericansports.com. That's voiceofamericansports.com. And so make sure you check out his radio show there. Very articulate man, and it was a pleasure having him.
It's going to be I think for him it's certainly going to be an interesting offseason. I think his value, I think, in this league, I think it's safe to say, Paul, there's plenty of teams that wouldn't mind having a player of his caliber.
Definitely. I mean, he definitely has proven that he can make plays in this league. And, I mean, he felt like he needed to be, he should have been on the field more. And you definitely have to respect that aspect of things and respect him on that when it comes down to that whole situation. And give him credit because he was prepared, and he prepared himself throughout the season. So give him credit for that. Again, we want to thank Desmond Clark for stopping by. We also want to thank Kurt Nealing of ProBasketballTalk.com. It was a pleasure having him, and make sure you check out some of the articles there at ProBasketballTalk.com. As always, Jeremy, we want to thank you, and we want to thank the listeners for stopping by and taking a listen. For Jeremy Yesby, this is Paul Gant. See you later.